This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're ready to roll on this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonatoni. No shortage of stuff to talk about today as the NBA and NHL first rounds are off to a hot start. And it is officially draft week, which means coast to coast no more. After today, Michael Lombardi is hopping on a plane and headed out here to Vegas for all of our draft coverage this week. How are you doing, Michael?
We're good. I can't wait to see you, Stormy. I'll be right there. We can watch the 76ers together. We can look at that. That'll be fun to watch that. And then we got the NFL draft. It's all good. It's a good time of the year. It really is.
That's only my dream, Michael, is to watch you sweat a Joel Embiid game in person. Yes, you have no idea how badly I want this.
You have no idea. It's not pretty. It's not. I mean, it's just not. I apologize in advance if you actually do.
So what is the feeling for tonight?
It's hard. Well, I mean, Maxey may not play. I mean, the feeling for tonight is they're going to have to make some adjustments, because when you only get 24 rebounds total and the other team gets 23 on the offensive glass alone, you know, rebounds and rings, isn't that what they always say? So they're going to have to figure that out. I think they're going to have to play Paul Reed more in the Tobias Harris area, which is going to limit the spot, because the big man is out there by the three-point line anyway. So it isn't like, you know, you have a low post player who kicks it out to the three-point shooters. You know, you have a guy who's out there at the three-point line. He took 8 three-pointers. So they're going to have to make some adjustments. They're just getting beat up on the boards, and Tobias Harris is in the last year of that $170 million almost max contract that Elton Brand gave him. But remember, Stormy, that the Sixers are the model organization, according to Josh Harris. As we transition into the NFL draft, just know, Washington Commanders fans, your model organization will be taking the court tonight in the Garden.
I love those parallels. So good. Yes, keep that in mind as you watch the 76ers tonight against the Knicks in Game 2. Philadelphia, by the way, getting 6 points tonight. The total, a low one, sitting at 205. You mentioned Tyrese Maxey. He was not at shoot-around this morning due to an illness, so he's technically listed as questionable tonight. Joel Embiid is questionable, but he'll be questionable every single day. I'm truly shocked, Michael, or maybe I'm not shocked. It was the most Joel Embiid way to get injured again this past game, I feel like, where it's the throw it to yourself off the backboard, spectacular dunk, and then he comes down and, oh, I've re-injured the knee again. I personally was really surprised that he came back into the game, but you could see the impact, Michael, that he has when he's on the court versus off the court speaks volumes in the numbers. In the 36 minutes with him, the team's plus 14, 12 minutes without him, they're minus 21. It's a significant difference with and without the big man.
Right. And then the fourth quarter, he's 0-for-5 from the field.
Yeah.
You can't make a shot in the fourth quarter when they need him, when they got the game close. And because he's exhausted. I mean, he's literally exhausted. His conditioning shows up in these games. But look, that's the way it is. Do you realize, Stormy, you say I'm a bitter 76er fan? True, I am. I accept it. But since this Embiid phenomenon has hit the Philadelphia area, they've not advanced to the second round. He's never won a second round game. They've won five series since he's been with the team, and they've all been in the first round. So what are we getting? We're getting mediocrity. And so that's what fuels my bitterness. But look, you know, the Knicks, can they continue to shoot at this 42% from the three-point line? I don't think so. You know, they got him in a game where Brunson didn't play as well and they didn't win the game. As bad as the Sixers didn't rebound, they still had a chance to win that game if the big man scores in the second half, in the fourth quarter, which he wasn't able to do.
Yes, staring down an 0-2 hole, even with going back home, I feel like will be a challenge for the 76ers if they can't win tonight. But not to add any more fuel to your 76ers bitterness fire, Michael, but do you know how many players in the history of the NBA have been an MVP and never played in the conference finals? Do you know how many?
The answer to your question would be just one. Just one.
Yeah, I love that you
just
already
one.
Knew.
Joel Embiid, that's
correct.
It.
That is correct.
Well, because I know, because like this is part of the narrative of Embiid that has been created. I don't dislike Joel Embiid. I dislike players that don't reach their full potential. I dislike players that don't work hard, that aren't the team that advertise themselves as the team leader, but do have no leadership skills whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me so angry. And what makes me angry with Josh Harris and the Washington team and his ownership is he's allowed it to happen. He's catered to it. He's part of the problem. He's created this. If you talk to people at Kansas that had him, Embiid was different than he is now. Now, obviously, wealth makes you completely different. But so that's why anytime they play a tough team or a tough outing, they can't meet the resistance. They just don't have it. They've never had it. And that's why they've never been able to get past the second round, which supposedly the greatest basketball player in the history of basketball.
And a team in Philly this year that with Joel Embiid coming back was considered to be the biggest test for the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference. Certainly didn't look like it that first game. And if Joel is not going to be the type of player that you need him to be, it's going to be an uphill battle. They go from a -115 favorite, by the way, in this series, despite being the longer seed, to now +220, the Knicks -285 to complete the set. Any other big takeaways, Michael, from you in the NBA over the course of the weekend, results you saw, things looking ahead that stood out to you?
Well, all the home teams won, Stormy.
Yep.
All the home teams won, which is remarkable. There was no road team won. And I think the Bucks, I think some of these teams, the Pacers, you know, the Miami Heat just are not as the same team. Even if Butler were to play, they might not lose by 20, but they're not the same team that they were last year, right? They're missing parts of that team. They don't have the same continuity, the same defense. And so, you know, that doesn't surprise. The Heat are going to lose 4-0 to the Celtics. I just don't see how they're going to be able to do it. The one that surprised me was the Clippers dominating the Mavericks and the Mavericks scoring 8 points in the second quarter. I mean, you can't win a game when you score 8 points in the second quarter. And I think that there's going to have to be an adjustment. Obviously, Harden was spectacular. He's 6 of 11 from the floor. You know, he was able to have 28 points. He did what he does is shoot the ball really well and distribute. You know, he had 8 assists in the game. But to me, when they had a chance to win this game, but they score 8 points in the second quarter, you can't let a team get away from you. And then you were, you know, we missed you on Sunday. But I just think the Lakers, at playing all the minutes that they play, with Davis playing 45 and LeBron playing 41 in the altitude, the longer the game goes, the less effective they become.
Yeah, lost 9 straight now to the Denver Nuggets, which is an incredible thing there to see the dominance that Denver has had in this series. And despite a lot of those games being close last year, I'm not sure that they're going to be particularly close throughout the course of this series, laying 7.5 tonight against the Lakers. The Clippers also, who you mentioned, they're getting 2.5 points come tomorrow night in that game against the Mavericks. And the Celtics, who were a big favorite in game one against the Jimmy Butler-less Heat, are an even bigger favorite coming back in game two, sitting 15.5 right now. But okay, let's turn our attention from the NBA, Michael, back to the fact that it is draft week. And we have I'm continuing to ask you all of the questions that are on my mind, I'm very curious, what's your biggest question mark right now as you look ahead to Thursday? What's the thing that's really been going through your head?
Well, I think a lot of that's been going through my head is the obviously the quarterbacks, right? I think the other thing that goes through my head quite often is this is not a draft which has these elite, oh my God, they're going to turn franchises around players. There's some really good players in the draft, certainly in the offensive line. But I think sometimes because we label players first rounders, this draft has very few defensive first rounders in it. When I say first rounder, I don't mean where you get picked. I mean how you play. And when you're talking about drafting a guy in the first round, you want somebody who can come in and be at least, and when you're picking in the top 10, you want somebody who's going to be at least in the top 10 at their position. This draft doesn't have that feel to it. So that's on my mind. And then I want, you know, the league, Stormy, has really emphasized to teams, don't talk about your picks. Mm. We want the surprise. We want the drama. We want the intrigue on draft day. We want people in Detroit to not know what to expect. We want the unexpected. And so they really, really have done a hard sell on teams. No leaks. Don't let anybody know what you're going to do. We don't want to see this. We don't want that. And I think all this information that's been coming out is not reliable. You know, we do know that the information that, well, the Raiders would like to have Jaden Daniels? Of course they would. I mean, Pierce coached him at Arizona State, so did Marvin Lewis. But can they get to him? And can the player orchestrate himself to the Raiders? Highly doubtful. So I think all those things come into play when you're breaking down the draft. And this week, more than ever, Monday, Tuesday, is going to be a lot of misinformation that's under disguised as, I just got this. Mm. When you're not getting it from anybody.
Well, and I think a great example of keeping that information close to the vest is what the Washington Commanders are going to do there at number two overall. Nobody really has firm information one way or another. And then everything came out last week with the Commanders bringing in all the quarterbacks at once and seeing how they interact with one another is maybe another potential smokescreen for what they're going to do at that number two overall selection. But also because, Michael, we talk about keeping things close to the vest and the unknowns that are there that are here in the draft, like, is that the biggest unknown to you, is the quarterbacks, or is there another position that's really intriguing to you?
Yeah, I think the unknown that I want to see is all these teams that are talking about that they're going to draft these offensive weapons are looking at defense. Chicago, like, how does Chicago let a good defensive rusher go by or a three technique go by? Like, I think there's very few players in this draft that have defensive talent, Murphy being one from Texas, Latua from UCLA, assuming he passes. I think that's really, they're going to go quicker because there's less of them.
Okay. We'll talk a lot about the defensive players, say, a little bit later on in the program. The over-under for how many defensive players will be selected in round one is set at 10.5, the over slight juice to minus 175, but could be a common draft era record with offensive players in the first round this season. We're looking at some draft tea leaves when we come back. Stay with us on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com website. All the same great content that you're used to, but with a fresh new look. You can get all of our VSiN show hosts and experts' best bets on a daily basis. Check out the betting splits page, see where the money in action don't match up. Exclusive articles as well, including columns from our own Michael Lombardi. And our guy Matt Eumanns has a mock draft out right now, with it being draft week. The first round getting underway this Thursday from Detroit. Again, make sure you check out vsin.com. But let's stick with that theme of the draft, because I swear to gosh, Michael, that we are seeing every single day a new headline. Somebody is making a call. Somebody's picking up the phone. Where are these trades going to happen? Who's going to move down? Who's going to trade up for a quarterback? It's just, it's never ending right now. And for somebody like you who has been a part of draft days and been a part of many draft day trades, what is that sequence of events like? Like, are at this point in the week, a few days away from the NFL draft, are you guys having agreements in principle about what might happen? Is it one of those things where as soon as you're on the clock, that's when things change? Give us the lay of the land. How's that work?
Well, it's different for each team. For example, Arizona has made it very clear they will move down. They're not looking for a specific player at four. They're looking for a great trade. So if you come with a huge package, as Uncle Junior said, if you come heavy, they're liable to listen. But if you don't, they're going to wait till they're on the clock. They're going to milk it as far as they can milk it to see the maximum value that they can get. Now, I'm sure they're getting a ton of phone calls. But for them to cash in a deal now, it's got to be astronomical. So everything is kind of tabled until we're on the clock. If you're New England, you can't make a trade now because New England doesn't know what Washington's going to do. And so New England, if they take the guy that, say they take Drake May at two and New England wanted him, maybe New England now moves. Maybe New England moves. Or they'll listen to offers before they take Daniels. But for them, they know that if for them to move, it's going to take a significant, plus they can't be in love with the player. And everybody who hears they're trading down or they're trading up doesn't really know the board. And so the board guides you into those decisions. You can't trade from 4 to 14 if you don't have 15 players that you think have the ability to start from day one, because you're trading away from a really good player. It doesn't mean you don't want to trade, but now you're trading down. And so you have to understand your board to understand how to make trades. And that usually happens when you're on the clock. Mm. You know teams that are willing to trade, Stormy. So I know that if I call you up, I know you'll make a trade if it's the right deal. But if I call another team up who doesn't like to trade, it's probably going to be hard.
Are you having any preliminary conversations of like what would it take just to gauge the other side of it at all?
Well, you do. You start off with the old, well, you know, we're picking, you know, your card. Let's take the Cardinals, for example. You're picking fourth, okay? And, you know, the chart says your pick's worth 1,800 points. And I'm picking, say I'm Minnesota, and I'm picking 1,250. Or I'm 11th, and my pick's worth 1,250 points, right? So I owe you 600 points. Well, they're going to say, no, that's not really viable. That chart doesn't apply to our trade. Because there are trades that haven't used the value. Because your pick is more valuable. Why is your pick more valuable? It's pretty much basic economics. We have more teams calling for it. Okay. So the value goes up and up and up and up. That's how Chicago got so much from Carolina, because the Carolina was competing against the Raiders. They were competing against other teams for that first pick. That's why they got a haul that far exceeded the trade value chart.
Okay. So the Cardinals clearly at number four are in prime position to potentially trade out of that spot. If, as you referenced, if a team comes heavy, right? The Los Angeles Chargers there at five, a very similar situation. And their general manager, Joe Horitz, has said he doesn't want a fair trade deal to move on from number five. A team has to make it very attractive for them. He said they have to make it attractive for us to move away from those players. The whole it's a fair trade thing is a wash. I don't think that's a trade that we'd be interested in. So the Chargers too, saying essentially that they would need to be blown away to move on from that pick.
Right, because here's why. They know at five they're guaranteed to get themselves the best offensive lineman. Okay, the best non-quarterback player. I don't think they would take a receiver, but you never say never. But to me, to get a left tackle, and you're going to have to pay a lot. Because if you trade away from a guy that you have graded really high on your board, then you don't get that same player. And so it's got to make it worth your while. You got to make it worth your while, right? And so you just sit back and let teams compete against themselves and find out who is the most desperate team out there. Because here's what we do know. We do know Minnesota has Sam Darnold on their team, mm-hmm. right? And they have really no one else. They can't play Nick Mullins, right, as the starting quarterback. They can't go through that. They're going to have to get another quarterback on their roster. The rookie Hall, we don't know if he's going to be any good. He tried to play one game, and he got hurt. Then they put him back in. That didn't go well. So that's a long way off. And then we look at the Broncos. I mean, the Broncos have no other quarterback on their team but Jarrett Stidham. Like, you can't play with just Stidham, so they have to draft a quarterback. So we know they're going to be desperate, and we know that Sean Payton loves to give up next year's pick to get in the first round.
So speaking of the Broncos, what did you make of the comments from their general manager, George Patton, this week? As we continue to sift through our NFL draft tea leaves here, Payton said, I do think it's a good quarterback class. There are 7 to 8 quarterbacks that we like, who we think can play in this league someday, saying that he believes there are 7 or 8 quarterback starters in this draft, Michael. They're not going to force anything, but 7 or 8 quarterbacks in this draft that could be starters? Is that real?
I mean, come on. No, come on. How could that be real? There hasn't been 7 or 8 starters in any draft.
But how can he say that and believe that? That's crazy.
I have no idea. And then get away with it. Like, why wouldn't somebody, when he made that statement, say, George, seriously? I mean, when has there ever been 7 quarterbacks in any draft that have come in and contributed to the NFL? If that were the case, we wouldn't be quarterback depleted. Nobody, of course, says it. They just write down like he's saying the gospel according to St. David. I mean, like, seriously, why won't somebody say that to him? Like, George, what are you talking about? You're going, Spencer Rattler's going to be a starter at 6 feet, runs 5 flat. You're going to start him? Okay, good luck. How's that working out for you? Give me a break. In fact, I was told this morning by someone that's done all the quarterbacks that once you get past some of the quarterbacks in the first round, there's no other ones. The Sam Hartmans, yeah. That whole contingency, the Tulane, they're just really all they are is third string, maybe backups.
So, Michael, that's exactly...
He's talking about 7 or 8?
That's exactly what I was thinking. So we all know the big 6, right? With 5 and 6 being Michael Penix or Bo Nix, which one of them, if one, will sneak into the first round. Then after that, it's Spencer Rattler. Then after that, you say the Tulane guy. Like, is it Michael Pratt? Is it Joe Milton? Like, who are you talking about after that?
Joe Milton. I mean, like, seriously, Joe Milton can throw the ball from here to the ocean and probably throw it across the ocean, but he's yet to prove he can play quarterback. I mean, he's a talented arm thrower, but he's not a quarterback. Like it's just all it is I'm going to lie to everybody to get through the press guy. Let me tell you. So that what he's trying to do is pretend that he has a lot of options. And when somebody pretends they have a lot of options, you know what that means, Stormy? They have no options. They have no options. It's all just, as Frank Pantalengi said, it's all lies, lies, lies.
The Broncos are plus 115 to take a quarterback with whatever their first selection ends up being. Bo Nix is minus 175 to be drafted to the Broncos. On J.J. McCarthy's odds board, plus 330. The Broncos are the fourth team for those odds behind the Vikings, Giants, and Patriots. Michael Penix, it's the fourth there as well behind the Raiders, Vikings, and Seahawks. So ultimately, as you said, they clearly need a quarterback somewhere. Who will it be? Where will he be drafted? It's yet to be seen. Well, let's hit one more of these here, Michael. Howie Roseman is already reportedly calling teams to move up to grab a cornerback. Does that sound about right to you, currently sitting at the number two position?
I think they steal that stuff from me. I mean, like, I started that. Like, I said that on my pod 3 weeks ago. Like, if I'm Howie and I've filled all my draft needs, I've filled basically my roster's completely filled, then knowing the way Howie likes to move up, I would think he would try to trade up to get the corner from Toledo, Mitchell. And now all of a sudden I'm dealing with this. I hear Howie, like, this is all just like people take stuff and then they manifest it into their own. We know Howie likes to move up. True. We know the Eagles need a corner. True. But does 1 + 1 = 2 here? I don't know yet. Do I expect him to do it? Sure. Do I think the Colts could trade up to get a corner? Of course I do. Because this draft is not defensive filled. So it isn't like if we pass on the corner, and two of the corners are not lockdown man-to-man corners. They're more zone corners, the two Alabama guys. Yeah. So, like, for me, that's part of it. Like, these rumors that get put out there are just people just regurgitating some other people's opinions.
Eagles plus 125 favorite for corner to be the first position off of the board for them. And I like what you said there about Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, because he is one of those true shutdown corners. I know Terrion Armstrong has gotten a lot of love from Alabama recently as potentially being the first corner off the board, but I feel like there's a clear distinction between one and two there, at least in my mind and from a lot of the scouting reports that I have read. We're going to hit the break. More NFL draft talk when we come back. Continuing our division deep dives, we've got the NFC South today. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we here at VSiN are offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free when you sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's games, but future events as well. Take advantage, though. It's a limited time offer. VSiN.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you, rolling along here on the Lombardi Line. Draft week edition, because the countdown continues just a couple days away. And each day on the program, we have been doing division deep dives. So going through division by division around the National Football League, four teams at a time, and saying, what is this team's immediate need? What should they be doing with their first selection off the board? And as we go to the NFC South today, Michael, very unique situation here that hasn't really been talked about much with the Atlanta Falcons is that they are still undergoing some tampering allegation investigation from the NFL regarding the acquisition of Kirk Cousins and how some phone calls may or may not have happened prior to him officially signing with the team. What should fans and bettors be aware of when it comes to the Falcons and their draft prospects this week?
Well, if they're going to do anything, they got to do it in the next 48 hours, right? And so I would suspect that would be the case. You know, it was floated that they were going to flip. Minnesota was going to go to 8 and Atlanta was going to go to 11, which is essentially costing Atlanta a third-round draft pick. But that seems a little bit a little bit light, considering the fact that some of these other teams have been, you know, look at Steven, look at the Dolphins got fined, you know, a first round pick for tampering with Brady and, you know, and all those things that their, and their owner got fined $1 million. The limited partner got fined $500,000. So it find it hard to believe that they would let somebody off on that, but it's got to come out fairly soon. If Atlanta stays at where they are at 8, you know, and they, nothing comes out of it, and they're able to kind of get through this, and maybe it'll be next year's draft. I don't know. But I think this, I think Atlanta's the wild card, right? Atlanta needs, Grady Jarrett's coming off an ACL. But Atlanta has this belief. They really do. They have this belief that they were just a quarterback away. Like, they think they're a 13-4 team, 14-3 team, that if they had a quarterback with the skill players they have, the offensive linemen they have, and the defense, that they're going to be really good. I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's their logic. And so I could see them taking a defensive lineman, an edge guy. You know, they have Harrison, who they drafted in the third round last year. They have a BT, who they drafted in the second round 2 years ago. They kind of come off the edge. And so they need an edge presence, certainly. They could use another three technique because, as I said, Jarrett's coming back off the ACL. And their corner situation could be upgraded. Terrell's a fabulous corner, but you're talking about Clark Phillips as their second corner, fourth round pick in 23. And then you're talking about Mike Hughes, who they signed from Detroit as their nickel. So I think those are the two positions I would look at.
And D-line edge is the big favorite, minus 210 for the Falcons to go with that number 8 overall selection. Does it surprise you at all, though, looking at some of the different markets, that Leiatu Latu is actually now the favorite in this market to go number 8 overall, yet Dallas Turner is still the favorite to be the top defensive player off of the board?
Well, I think Latutu is better than Kerner. I think everybody in the league sees it that way. But what everybody doesn't know in the league is where his medical is, right? He's coming off of a fusion surgery with his neck. The two defensive players that no one has talked about until the last, what, 5-10 days? I mean, we've talked about it on the podcast, but very few people have. Christopher Sims had, when we had him on the show, is Latua and Brian Murphy. Those two players are the elite players within the defensive front. It's not Dallas Turner, it's those two. Now, Turner might go in front of him because he's from Alabama and that carries a certain amount of cachet and all that. But at the end of the day, Latua and Murphy are the two players that I talk to and watch on tape and talk to other teams that are higher on everybody's board that I talk to than what these mock drafts have.
That's great to know. And in the final segment, so after this next break, we're going to do a dive specifically into the defensive players class and a lot of the options there. So we'll dive further on those players in a little bit. But let's stick with this division for now. The Falcons are a big favorite to win the division since they bring in Kirk Cousins, minus 130, win total set at 9.5. Then we've got the New Orleans Saints, who are picking a few picks back at number 14 overall, also coming off of a 9-8 season, 9 picks in the draft, including that 14 spot. O-line, a massive favorite here to be where the Saints go in the first round. And you can certainly understand why, Michael, with Ryan Ramczyk, their right tackle's knee not recovering how the team anticipated, their first round pick in 2022, certain question at left tackle. He was benched last season, and his fill-in and Andrus Peat wasn't re-signed. So minus 380, the price to take an offensive lineman here. But could they go anywhere else, or does that need to be the selection?
Well, I think when you look at this, part of this is too lineage, right? Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton have always put a priority on offensive and defensive linemen. That's what he's always done. And I think part of this number being inflated to where it is because there is a need and there is an expectation that they like to draft offensive linemen, which is really critical. And it's the strength of their team. And if you have Derek Carr playing quarterback, and if you don't protect, you're going to be in real trouble. You know, Trevor Penning did not play well. They need to get him fixed. James Hurst is an over 30 left guard. That's not going to work. And as you mentioned, Ramczyk at right tackle, there's no guarantee that he's going to come back. The one thing you don't want to be is tackle poor. And the Saints are tackle poor. That's why I think it's pretty clear that's what they'll do.
Then we've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 26, the reigning division champions here. They, like the Saints, 9-8 last year, spent a lot of money this offseason, but it was to retain players, not go out and bring anybody in. Odds pretty even in terms of the position taken in the first round. D-line edge plus 150, offensive line plus 200, corner plus 220.
Well, I think, look, they got through last year with their tackle situation. I think knowing Todd Bowles' corner is going to be something he wants to address. He trades Carlton Davis away. You know, they signed Thomas from Houston as an unrestricted, but I don't think that moves the needle, right? And so they're going to have to figure this out at corner. McCollum's a kid they drafted in the fifth round in 22. He's one of their starting corners to go along with Jamal Dean. I don't think that's going to cut it, right? So I think corner's in play here. Now, if the draft dictates a good offensive or defensive lineman comes to him, I could easily see them doing that. I wouldn't doubt that at all. But for the most part, I think to really knowing the way that Todd Bowles wants to operate, the way he wants to play straight man-to-man and really pressure the quarterback, they better get themselves a corner.
Yeah. Could they repeat in the division? Like we mentioned, the Falcons and odds on favorite here, but in the division, +300, second shortest shot on the board to repeat for Baker Mayfield and company. And then lastly here, but I will say they are the least. The Carolina Panthers, who don't have a first round pick, that'll be compliments of the Chicago Bears at number one overall, despite being 2-15 this past year because of what they traded to get Bryce Young a year ago. So they pick first at number 33 overall to kick off the second round. They're the longest shot by far in the division. It's an odds on number for them to take a wide receiver, Michael, -160 to get another weapon for Bryce Young. You think that's where they go?
Well, I think, look, here's where the Carolina Panthers an interesting pick. What Carolina wants to happen is they want four quarterbacks to go in the first round. They want to go to sleep Thursday night knowing the teams are looking for quarterbacks, which then puts the 33rd pick in play as the most valuable pick in the history of the draft, which then can recoup some of those picks that they've lost and gave up for Bryce Young. That would be utopia. And if you're sitting there and you're Dan Morgan, you really want to trade 33 and maximize it. Yeah, you need a wide receiver. That's great. But you need more picks, right? You've added basically six new players to your defense. You've added three new players to your offense. Certainly you need more defense. You need more receivers, no question. However, that being said, you can get more picks. And maybe if you slide down and you could get Ladd McConaughey from Georgia, or you could get Keon Coleman from Florida State in one of those picks where you move down where there's going to be more of a cluster of receivers. You know, I think the two Texas kids are kind of itching to go in the first round. Brian Thomas has got a medical. I don't know where that will land him on a lot of boards. So that's a concern. So I think ultimately, moving down, they want to be able to be the most popular girl in school on Friday night. That's what the goal has got to be. We got to have somebody out there that somebody can't resist, and they got to go to the prom. Because if they do, they'll end up getting a lot for that pick.
I love that. We'll see if they ultimately can trade out of 33 overall. Again, wide receiver -160 to be the first player selected for them. Offensive line at +180. And of course, they invested a lot in that offensive line in free agency, but you can never have enough depth considering you had the worst unit or one of the worst units in the NFL a year ago. You mentioned the medical, Michael. Have those decisions already been made? Are you ironing out the medicals this week? How's that play out?
Well, they're all been made and you're arguing with your doctor. You know, you're going back and forth with the doctor. Are you sure this is the right grade? You know, like, can't we, you know, and you're trying to go in and you're asking him to get more information. You're asking him to call other teams' doctors to see what they have. You're trying, if you like a guy and you've lost a guy in the medical derby, you're trying to get him back. You're trying to see if you could save him. And that's what's going on. But most 98% of the medical is already done. And the grades are on the cards. Okay. And the grades reflect where you're going to be allowed to pick them.
That's got to be such a hard decision. Trying to wheel and deal with a doctor. No, this is what we really genuinely feel. But are you sure? Are you 100% sure? Let's talk this over a little bit.
Especially when you're arguing with them and you're not a doctor.
Exactly. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line talking defensive players and a little more medical when we come back with Leatu Latu.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. We already hit you with this during the play-in tournament, but even throughout the entirety of the NBA postseason to the finals. DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use our code VSIN. New customers get $5, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's the code VSIN, V-S-I-N, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Three games in the NBA as round one rolls on coming up tonight. The Lakers getting 7.5 points against the Denver Nuggets. The Magic and Cavs going head-to-head, 5.5 the spread there. And Michael's 76ers getting 6 against the Knicks. We'll see how things play out there. Low totals in those last two games I mentioned, by the way. A lot of defense. And I imagine that we're going to see potentially more defense than we thought in this year's draft with the juice on the over of this 10.5 defensive players taken coming up here in round one, Michael. We've talked a lot about specific defensive players, each one in like small increments. So this one we're going to dedicate all to defensive players. The quarterbacks get too much love. Okay. We need to break down these guys a little
bit. Too much love.
But let's start with that prop there quickly. At 10.5, what is your gut telling you about more or less than 10.5 players going in the first round defensively?
I right now I have 10 there. I think if you poll people around the league, I think that the defensive board has 10. And then it has some question marks in terms of the medical, right? Fisk from Florida State, he's a medical. Is he going to go? Could he sneak in there? We talked about Latua. Could he go? You know, he's going to go in the first round. And you wonder about that. And then I think Edrin, the kid from A&M, will he go, the linebacker? I doubt that would happen. So when you look at the board is filled with a lot of potential starters. Okay. And when that's the case, that's what, to me, this is a cause and effect thing, Stormy. So because there's more potential starters than there are starters, that could make teams want to trade down and pick up more picks to acquire, because they're going to get the same player at 24 that you're going to get at 44 or 40. People don't believe that, but that's the case in terms of the grade. So I think that's why, you know, I think the over is probably a reach, because I just don't know if there are 12 first rounders.
Okay. The over, that number is juice -175. If you think it ultimately does stay 10 and not get to 11 plus 140, the price there. So bet 100, win 140. As far as the first defensive player selected market goes, when we talked about Leatu Latu earlier, you mentioned the medical. And for anybody at home who doesn't know his story, he played at Washington, had to medically retire in 2020, had a fusion neck surgery, and then came back after 2 years, transferred to UCLA, and was able to come out of that medical retirement, get back out on the field, and has turned into one of the best defensive players in the entire country. And Michael, a lot of people think that between he and Dallas Turner, he is actually the better player, but that medical is a big question mark. Do you think he could be worth taking a shot at that plus 275? Because we don't know what the doctors for what teams have said about these two players. And if he is the better talent, could that be worth a shot at a plus money price?
No question it would be. It would be worth pizza money here, and Murphy would be worth pizza money there at plus 450. I think both those guys have a really good chance to go. Murphy's a three technique who can rush, and everybody just has attributed him to going in the bottom of the first round. It just shows you how little people value defensive tackles, right? They just think that they're rundown players. No, defensive tackles are the key to the game. And if you can get pressure from inside players like that, I think it's going to be it's really important. If you're Chicago and you're really don't have a legitimately great three technique, which is what Eberflus wants. Remember, Eberflus was on the Colts when they traded for Buckner. Okay. He was the defense coordinator at that time. He wants a three technique. Now, he drafted a kid from Florida last year in the second round. Big 6'6 kid. Maybe he can come through. Not quite the explosive player that goes with it, but a good role player with what they do. I could see Murphy going there. And I think Latua, it just comes down to the medical, right? No. It just comes down to what's the liberalization of your doctor. Is he willing to say, okay, this kid's fine, or we have too much liability? Because the doctors protect the franchise, and they have to. Because the last thing you want is to take a player that potentially could get hurt as serious with the neck injury. So those are things that most people would just run away from. Necks and backs scare the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. backs scare the hell out of me. Not because I'm afraid the guy's going to break his back. It's just that you can't lift weights with a bad back. You can't get stronger. It's hard to practice. All those things come in and those residual effects add up. So I think that's the case. Now, look, Turner's a good player. I'm not saying he's not. Just think Murphy and Latua are better.
And, I mean, the production and tape at UCLA certainly spoke for itself when it comes to Latu. 23.5 sacks in 25 games at UCLA, 35 TFLs, 5 forced fumbles, a pair of interceptions. He was really a do-it-all guy at 6'5", 260. In terms of the top 10 market, I mean, we talk about the limited number of defensive players that are going to go in the first round to begin with. The top 10 is certainly going to be dominated by offensive players when you think about the quarterbacks, those star wide receivers, Joe Alt and the offensive linemen that are at the top of the board. Is it one defensive player in the top 10 to you?
Is there just one in the top 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think there will be one. I think there could be two. I definitely do, Stormy, because, look, like I said, when you pass a 3 technique, like when you're the Atlanta Falcons, and God knows with Kaiser Sose McKay and the GM of the year, Terry Fontenot, I mean, they know all and end all. But when you pass a 3 technique to take a running back, you really don't understand team building whatsoever. You really don't. I mean, the 3 technique is a dinosaur. It's impossible to find one. Why do we substitute defensive tackles all the time? Because you can't find one that can do both. It's hard. So you try to mix and match. Whereas if you get a guy like Jalen Carter that can rush and play the run, wow. Well, you know, I mean, look, we saw Christian Wilkins go early, and he had 9.5 sacks last year. Would you call him a pass rusher? No, but he can power the pocket, and he can push these soft guards around. You're the Raiders, and you have Gardner Minshew playing quarterback, and your guard situation is tenuous. You get a good 3 technique against the Raiders, you got to slide the protection to them all the time. Because now you're worried about keeping the pocket clean for your little quarterback who needs to step up. Those present problems week in and week out.
Okay, let's talk corners here real quickly, because we brought him up a little bit earlier. Quinyon Mitchell coming out of Toledo, he's -125 to be the first corner selected. But this number has moved around a lot, because last week when we were talking on the show, he was around -190, -195 to be the top off the board. Terrion Arnold from Alabama has gotten a lot of steam recently. He's now +105. How much of that line movement do you think is about fans getting in here, placing bets, and thinking about the name brand value of Alabama? And this kid was going up against SEC opponents, whereas Mitchell was playing in Toledo, playing against the MAC. Or do you think that it's clear, based on what you've seen on tape from Quinyon Mitchell, that he should be the top corner off the board?
Well, I think Mitchell is the top corner. It's not close. Here, let me explain this. This is part of scouting, too. When you understand scheme and you understand coaches, it allows you to have more insight into the scouting. Alabama traditionally under Nick Saban, and I've known him since 1991, he wants to play bump and run man. He wants to be physical with the line, and he wants to attack the pocket with all different kind of blitzes and leave his corners on the island. He needs man-to-man corners. And when I watched his tape this year and saw him play as much zone as he did, that told me he didn't trust his corners on an island. Now, that's really important. Because if Nick doesn't think his corners can play man-to-man on a steady basis, why would I draft a guy and expect him to be a man-to-man corner? Right? Why would I do that? And so I'm not saying that Kool-Aid's not a good player or that Arnold's not a good player. It's just that they're not shut-down, lockdown corners that they're being advertised by this media that says, well, they play in the Southeast Conference. They didn't want to play man-to-man in the Southeast Conference. Whereas the kid from Toledo, Mitchell, he went to the Senior Bowl, right? Best thing he could have ever done. Because now he's playing bump and run man against a high level of comp. And those 3 days at the Senior Bowl are worth more than 3 entire seasons at Toledo. Mm. Because you get to witness him playing against the best of the best, being coached by really good coaches. So that's really important.
And I remember having Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, on with us not too soon after the Senior Bowl. And he said what a standout Quinyon Mitchell was during that time and how important the presence was. And clearly coaches and scouts recognize that. His position prop is set at 13.5, -225 to go over. So meaning 14, 15 or lower down the list in the draft. We've said before you thought that he could be a top 10 selection. Where do you think, when you look at that 13.5, based on teams and their needs, could he go?
I think it goes under, because look, he is the one guy. If you're Vic Fangio, and this is where I kind of believe the notion about the Eagles is because if you're Vic Fangio and you're Howie, you know there's very few limited man-to-man mm-hmm. guys in here. Now, maybe they see it differently than I do, but that's how I see it. And so isn't it worth it to try to get the best one?
Yeah, see if they can trade up.
Your team's really good.
See if they can trade up from 22.
Yeah, if you can get to 11 or 12, yeah. I mean, especially if Denver would want to move down.
Sure, and if that is the case, you go from minus 125 for Mitchell to be the first corner selected to plus 185 going under that 13.5 position prop. We're going to hit the break, resetting with hour two when we come back on the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us.